Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's February the 15th, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain. She's in Terre Haute, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be along too today in a moment with all the day's agricultural news, including a snippet from the economic report of the president that has raised the ire of many an ag group in the nation. And the final ag trade numbers for the 2005 calendar year are in the book. Soybeans and cotton, as you might have guessed, did not fare very well. We'll talk with Drew Lerner today of World Weather Incorporated. He's out of Kansas City. That'll happen just after the bottom of the hour. And along the way, we'll check in again with U of I ag economist Daryl Good. He has some statistically based advice on how farmers can set up a commodity marketing plan. Well, it all happens on this Wednesday edition of AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago on this Wednesday afternoon, futures finish the day like this. The March wheat at 352, up 4¾ today. May futures at 360¼, up 4¾. And July wheat futures a nickel higher today at $3.74 a bushel. September's at 383, up 4. December contract 394½. They were up 5¼. March wheat in Kansas City, 3½ cents higher at 416½. And your new crop July at 416¾, up 6½ cents for the hard red winter wheat. From the corn pit in Chicago, March contract at $2.22, up 3¼. The May futures at $2.32¼, up 3¼. And July contract at $2.41½, up 3½. September corn $2.48¼, up 2 cents. December at $2.58½, up 2¼. And the March corn 2007 contract at $2.65. They finished 2¼ higher today. March oats, 192, up 3. The May contract, up 3¼ at 191¾. Soy complex now. March futures, 587, up 3¾. May's, 599, up 3. And July, 608½, up 2¼. August soybeans, 612, 3 higher. September, 612½, up 2½. And the November contract up 4 cents today at 619¾. January beans at 624, they were up 3½ cents. The March bean meal at 182.40, they were up a 10. And the May contract at 184.40, up 10. The May March bean oil at 22.27, up 23 for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, the numbers finished like this. The feeder cattle March contract at 108.25, down 45 cents. February live cattle off 62½ at 90.85. And the April lean hogs at 61.47½ were down $1.45 for the day.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd. Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk with you. Let's start with the Mercantile Exchange and the hog futures, which I believe at one point today were down the limit. They didn't finish that low, but we're still off $1.45. That on what I heard was some cash sales that were quite a bit lower today out in parts of Iowa, maybe Nebraska.
The packer margins have been squeezed, and the profitability to process hogs is being tested, and as a result of that, the packers backed away. Being profitable at a hog processing plant is extremely important. The trend is officially down in the hog market in April hogs, and as a result of that, we have seen weakness in other markets. There does seem to be a lot of meats competing against shelf space. Ordinarily, we see strength when crude oil and energy is lower and metals are lower, because that usually means the good news when the stock market and consumer dollars are going over there. But it's more or less in commodity funds, it was kind of a discouragement, because this big bull market in the commodities, a lot of it's been based on gold and silver and the oil energies, and a lot of the other commodities have gone along for the ride. So in essence, spillover bearishness took place also in the mercantile exchange. Also, major problems with bird flu in Europe, and that indirectly, possibly will hurt the meat industry indirectly.
Speaking of going along for the ride, it appeared that there was quite a bit of selling in the bean pit today, and once that dried up, I think it said the locals were going along with the ride on that one on the downside, and she turned around and rallied back late.
Yeah, we understand there was two major firms, Refco and another firm, were turned into a major buyer during the mid-session. The private, the weather people, actually wetter in South America, and I think also wetter in parts of the winter wheat growing area. So we don't understand, other than a fundamental a fund point of view of buying. In a situation like that, with two firms buying, it possibly could even have been profit-taking because the official trend in soybeans is down. And, unmistakably it's still down. And, but they did enough buying to create a rally to some extent over there in the corn pit and the wheat pit as well.
What are you telling clients about how to manage the new crop beans and cash sales?
Well, from a pure fundamental point of view, that it's easy. You have to be bearish. And from a technical point of view, you have to be bearish. I'm always amazed philosophically the arguments from people about, say, what percentage. I think that's a job up to the individual farmer to decide. But, unequivocally, the fundamentals are very bearish. The trend is lower. It all adds up to a bearish situation on February the 15th, 2006.
So you would be
You're
satisfied
short.
I'm sorry?
You're short the market.
Yeah.
And, obviously, there was some tremendous opportunities in here. About moving cash beans above the $6 mark.
Sure.
There was also some moving of some new crop cash beans at $6.20. I don't understand really the argument of where the easy part of the equation is be bearish. Some people are a week ago were saying, oh, this market looks like it's going to go substantially higher, but with the gold market and the energy market flat, there's other market factors in here, and ultimately the real fundamentals will start to show.
And the real fundamentals are a 55 million bushel carryout on the beans? And
yeah, and
2.4
if we do
billion
come in with more bean acres next year, it equates to some pretty large carryovers the following year. We're looking at a situation where it could be just a little kinder as far as growing conditions than Argentina and Brazil, and even in the western wheat belt. But right now, the market's far enough along, and the market action on Sunday night and last week basically indicated that they put the weather concerns of Argentina and Brazil in the back seat.
Hey, I know this is a long wait out, but did you make note that the March next year contract, 2007, I think it traded up to what, in the corn at 268, is that right?
It possibly could.
Yeah, that looked like a number that was fairly interesting to me. Any reason to look out that far?
Well, it's starting to become quite popular with some of the marketing people to go on out and far out equation. And when I first started as a commodity broker and grain merchandiser in Danville, Illinois, when the great grain robbery took place in 1972, I remember somebody selling three crops of corn at $1.50. And it's the corporate philosophy from the early day is, trade the market well in the first 30, maybe even 6 months. But sometimes there's a lot of unknowns when you go out a year to 2 years on down the road. For example, energy, changes in farm policy, and other, strategic items. And, one of the major factors in staying successful, staying profitable, is organizing and understanding risk. And, when you go out in time too far, it can damage your profitability, and there's hidden risk there, Todd. So I do want to emphasize that a lot of people are going on out and pushing the button, but I can remember the times where it wasn't always the smart way to play.
Absolutely, and that contract settled, by the way, in the 2007 at 265. And one of the reasons I mentioned it was, did you see the news, I think it was released yesterday, that China is expected to be an importer of corn eventually?
You know, there's also this talk in the U.S. Senate that China has to narrow the trading gap and things like that. And there's been a group of people out here saying for several years that China's going to do this and that and the other thing. And when I start to see China starting to import corn, I'll believe it when I see it, or even slow the export programs down. Corn is $4 a bushel over there. You know, they're not allowing U.S. corn to go in there in any. And, you know, that's something that does upset a central Illinois farmer to no end. So, you know, is it trading and the playing field level with China? No, it's not. But that's one issue that we hope the Secretary of Agriculture does work out.
Paul, we appreciate you being with us today.
Have a profitable day, Todd.
You too. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Mark Report on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
At the bottom of the hour, we'll talk with Drew Lerner about the agricultural weather. Here's the forecast for this evening from our own Mike Sola. He says tonight in the north, it'll be cloudy, a wintry mix of snow, sleet, freezing rain, and rain. In central sections, cloudy, some showers, a few isolated thunderstorms. In the south, mostly cloudy, some scattered showers and thunderstorms. Lows this evening from 25 in northwestern Illinois to 52 in the far south. Dave Dickey's here now. He has a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the President's Council of Economic Advisers has issued a report on the overall U.S. economy. The document included an entire chapter on U.S. agriculture and concluded, among other things, that most farmers do not benefit from commodity subsidies, and support to agriculture can be provided in many forms that are potentially less market-distorting than existing commodity subsidies. The report angered many producers, but Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley says in the context of world trade talks, it makes sense.
If you're just looking at a safety net for agriculture, they're on the wrong side of agriculture on that issue. But if they're issuing this report in conjunction with what they're trying to accomplish in the Doha round of negotiations for reducing barriers to trade, then they're right on.
National Farmers Union incoming President Tom Bias reacted angrily to the report. He says the President's Council of Economic Advisers does not understand U.S. agriculture or why U.S. ag producers need a safety net.
They just don't understand what's going on in rural America. You know, we've had declining commodity prices, skyrocketing input costs as a result of energy and interest rate hikes, less than full production in many areas of the country, and trade agreements that threaten to jeopardize our safety net. And these folks are sort of blaming American farmers, and that's wrong.
Bias says U.S. farmers and ranchers need more support, not less. Meanwhile, final ag trade numbers for calendar year 2005 are in the books, and the U.S. managed to post a slim ag trade surplus last year. But USDA economist Nora Brooks says 2005 was a disappointing year for the value of soybeans and cotton.
Most of the story in 2005 exports is going to be from the lower prices for soybeans and cotton. We actually had soybean shipments rose about 2% over the year, and cotton shipments were up about 18% over the year. But overall, the values for both those commodities were down significantly in 2005. For soybeans, the value was down about 5% from 2004, and for cotton, the value was down about 8% from 2004.
The U.S. last ran an ag trade deficit in 1962. The largest U.S. ag trade surplus, nearly $27 billion, came in 1996. Deere and Company set sales and earnings records in the first quarter. Michelle O'Neill has more.
From November through January, Deere profits rose 11% to nearly $236 million, or 99 cents per share, compared to 89 cents last year. Sales increased 7% to $4.2 billion. Spokesman Ken Golden says Deere officials expected a decline in agricultural equipment sales, and they dropped 6%. But increased sales of lawn equipment along with construction and forestry equipment offset the decline in tractor and combine sales.
We believe at this point that overall net equipment sales will be up 3 to 5% for the year. And that is a increase in our guidance over the previous quarter. We were thinking it was going to be up 1 to 3%. And so we're more optimistic than we were a quarter ago. And we believe that right now we're headed towards a record year, which of course would exceed last year's record.
Last year, Deere & Company earned $1.4 billion, and it expects that will increase to $1.7 billion this year. That forecast includes the sale of John Deere Healthcare to United Healthcare, which should close in the second quarter and add about $225 million to company earnings. I'm Michelle O'Neill.
A group of Japanese lawmakers said Tuesday they believe most U.S. companies process beef perfectly following an inspection tour of a Tyson Foods processing plant in Kansas. But the farm minister said Japan will not lower its safety standards for U.S. beef imports because of mad cow fears. The five lawmakers from the ruling Liberal Democratic Party also severely criticized U.S. authorities over a veal shipment last month which banned bone material that prompted Japan to halt U.S. beef imports, saying there would be no resumption without a full investigation. USDA Secretary Mike Johanns says that investigation is proceeding and Japan can expect answers.
We will very definitely answer any questions that they might have, whether it's the issue of downer animals in processing or whatever. I want everybody to walk in at some point and say, we've investigated all we can investigate. We've reduced to writing exactly what we did. Here's the recommendations, and not feel pressured by a timeline that I may set.
The LDP's findings contradicted those of an earlier fact-finding trip by the opposition Democratic Party of Japan. The DPJ mission said the Tyson facility did not completely remove banned parts from the beef it processed. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, reminding you to put March the 7th down on your calendars for the all-day Ag Outlook from WILL. It's held over at the Beef House in Indiana. More details on that later. Well, up next, the University of Illinois is developing a new marketing plan for corn and soybean farmers. We'll hear more on the Marketing Matrix.
Farmers for decades have historically sold their corn or soybeans in a single-minded fashion. When do I sell it? And how do I sell it? Is the price good enough? And should I deliver the product today or sometime in the future? University of Illinois Extension Ag Economist Daryl Good thinks there may be a better way, a strategy that parcels the crop into four dedicated marketing programs.
A better way to think about marketing strategy is to think in a matrix of two things. Part of the matrix is who sells it? Do I do it or do I have somebody else do the marketing? And then regardless of who does it, what kind of approach do we take? Do we take a kind of a mechanical approach to selling so that if I'm doing that myself, I sell by the calendar every month, I sell some. Or if I'm doing that with an outside source, I do it with a Cargill contract. That's one line. The other line is, do I stay active in terms of trying to time market sales, either myself or hiring a consultant to do that? So you end up with a matrix with four cells. Who does it, me or somebody else? And are we mechanical or are we active in our approach? And my strategy is, what percent of my crop do I put in each one of those four cells?
A mechanical strategy is used by someone who thinks the markets are efficient at setting a price and hard to beat. An example would be selling 1/12 of a crop each month of the year, regardless of price. Good says these are best employed by less disciplined marketers.
On the other hand, if you think markets are inefficient enough that there's some money to be made, I can beat the markets. I'm pretty smart at marketing. I'm in a strong financial position. I like to take a little risk. Then I'm going to be more in the traditional trying to guess when to sell and how to sell that. So, again, thinking through what describes an individual, where do I put my crop in those four cells?
All in all, the marketing matrix is a pretty simple strategy. The difficult part is deciding how to divide the crop among the four marketing options. Two are mechanical, two are in the active strategies. That's a more traditional sell now in this way. Each of those options is divided by who the marketer might be, either the farmer or someone else. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carl Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL AM 580 Interbana. We're joined now by Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain out of Terre Haute, Indiana, to take a look at the cash grain market. Good afternoon to you, Kay.
Good afternoon to you, Todd.
I want to know what you made of the drop and then the recovery first in the bean pit for the day.
I think the market just got tired of going up. And, of course, the funds have been totally absent from the bean complex. You know, the big index funds, they're long about 150,000 contracts of corn, about even in beans, but they got in there today, so maybe it's a sign of things to come. But I think we just kind of reached a precipice. I don't think it's going to fall out of bed yet, but I just got tired of going up, and some of the locals got tired of the funds being gone and sold off a little bit, but we had a really good recovery today.
Are you fearful that it'll fall out of bed anytime soon?
Not right away. I think we still got a little ways to go. I'm a little bit worried about, you know, we got first notice day coming the 28th of February. That always creates pressure on the market. They're going to be rolling these positions, and you're going to see some everyday factors affect this market, but for the funds to totally vacate, I don't think that's really going to happen yet. But it's given the producer an excellent selling opportunity, and trust me, Todd, they have taken advantage of it.
Yeah, I've heard that. And does that cause alarm in any way for prices in the future?
The only thing I don't like about this, and it's just one of these things that you normally don't see, but there's been so much farmer selling, and I'm assuming it's happened everywhere, not just here. The new crop basis levels are probably at areas where you never see them. They're very, very sloppy. Could get even a little bit worse because, I mean, all the end users have dropped their basis back because everybody's selling them a lot. So the basis levels are a lot lower than they normally are, and that's because of farmer selling.
And that's not new crop sales that's based off the old crop sales that they've got coming into the bin at the moment, or is it new crop sales that they've got on the books?
This is new crop sales.
I mean,
because normally if an elevator is going to buy grain, you know, you're going to turn right around and sell it to the end user. So I think they're selling a lot of new crop that the farmers are selling. So the new crop basis levels are normally a lot lower than you normally see them this time of year because of farmers selling.
I was just thinking maybe that the old crop had been sold all the way through August and they had their bins full. And so the basis, as they looked into September, they decided just to wait it out because they thought that they would have enough in the pipeline. But I had it backwards on myself. What are your bids for the day?
All right, our cash corn today is 202, beans are 568, and new crop wheat is 339.
Anything else to add before I let you go?
I think we've pretty well covered it.
Thank you much.
Thank you, Todd.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. She takes a look at the cash grain markets with us here on WILL on Wednesday afternoons. In about 2 minutes, Drew Lerner will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Right now, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. In his budget address today, Governor Rod Blagojevich told Illinois lawmakers they can support his efforts to help children and families, or they can side with big business and special interests. The governor's budget speech at times prompted jeers and laughter from Republicans, especially when he described the state as being in good financial shape. Blagojevich's proposal calls for state government to spend $55.3 billion in fiscal 2007, a 1.7% increase from the year before. The money would expand preschool, help families pay for college, and hire more police and prison guards. Some Democratic lawmakers have a measured reaction to the budget address. Mount Zion State Representative Bob Flyder says he wants to make sure any proposed cuts in business tax credits would not hurt the state's economic development. Republican Representative Chapin Rose of Mohammed questions the credibility of the governor's numbers. He says the budget proposal doesn't consider underfunding of state pensions and Medicaid. Former Illinois Governor George Ryan won't be testifying at his racketeering and fraud trial in federal court until next Tuesday at the earliest. Ryan's chief defense counsel Dan Webb said in court today he wants to save Ryan until after other witnesses have testified. Ryan also told reporters during a break from the trial, or rather Webb also told reporters during a break from the trial, that he still isn't sure that Ryan will testify. In Indianapolis, state police say there appears to be nothing dangerous in an off-white powder that spilled out of an envelope being opened in Indiana House Speaker Brian Bosma's State House office today. The staff member who opened the envelope washed her hands and was isolated, but appears to be fine. Law enforcement officers are inviting Champaign County residents to learn about police work and the law in general. A Citizens Police Academy will focus on such issues as firearm safety and DUI enforcement, the use of force, and tasers. The Academy runs Thursday nights, tomorrow through April 27th. To find out more, contact your local police department or the Champaign County Sheriff's Office.
News from
I'm
NPR
Jim Meadows,
is made possible
AM 580
in part
News.
By a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL AM 580. Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City, now on the line with us to take a look at what appears to be a very, very chilly forecast for the weekend. Hi, Drew.
Good afternoon. It is indeed going to be nasty out there, and I guess this is the audience's time here to get back at me for anything I've done wrong, because I'm going to be in Grand Forks, North Dakota on Friday, and I think the low temperature that morning is going to be about 30 below zero.
Oh man, that is cold. It's not going to be that cold here, though.
No, but we are headed into probably one of our most significant cold air masses of the season. Certainly, it'll rival some of the cold air that we got into back in November and December, and remind us that it's not quite time for spring yet, and that's probably good news. We need to kind of freeze up the ground a little bit. I know there's a lot of producers out there who have been a little bit concerned about the fact that there's been no frost in the ground this year, and this will certainly help that situation quite a bit. We'll probably ice up some of the rivers a little bit as well, and might even restrict some barge traffic in a week or so. But in the meantime, it looks like there's going to be some pretty hefty snowfall across the northern portions of the Midwest. This is going to come out of the Wyoming-Nebraska area over the next 24 hours and move right across the heart of the northern Midwest into Michigan and parts of Wisconsin. Probably see some anywhere from 6 to 9 inch snow accumulations coming out of eastern Iowa, Wisconsin, into northern parts of Michigan, with maybe even some greater amounts. Down a little bit further to the south of this region, we're going to see a mixture of precipitation. It'll start off as rain and switch over to snow towards the end of the storm system, which will probably be sometime on Friday. It's going to be pretty sloppy for a while. And then, of course, temperature is going to bottom out. We'll be extremely cold during the weekend itself. We'll look for a brief period of warm-up, and I put that in quotation marks, for the early part of next week, and then a second surge of cold will come on and chill us down again for midweek. So we've got at least a full week of much more winter-like weather across the area, and then maybe we'll start warming back up as we get into the week of the 27th. That's a long ways out, though.
Not happy to hear about that second set of really cold weather. When you said that it might freeze up the rivers, I was thinking the weekend wasn't going to be long enough to do that. So apparently we get two shots at it and a little warmer by maybe the end of the month then.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't expect the Illinois River to be shut down. And there would probably just be some barge traffic restrictions in the Iowa portion of the Mississippi River. So it's not I didn't mean to paint the picture too bleak there.
All right. Thanks much. Anything else before I let you go?
Well, we just need to keep an eye on South America. There's a lot of problems starting to build up in Argentina, Paraguay, and southernmost sections of Rio Grande, western portions of Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil right now. A very big need for rain evolving, and there's not much in the pipeline right now. We are very short on the topsoil for moisture right now, and the subsoil is rated short, and we can't go much more than a few more days without some really serious stress evolving, and so we'll need to watch that a little bit more closely now. There's probably not a good soaking rain coming into that region for at least a week and maybe as much as 10 days.
How close is their crop to being finished in those
areas?
It's
pretty close. It's the second, it's the late double-cropped beans in Argentina that we would be most concerned with. Also, the beans in Rio Grande do Sul, those crops are still going to be reproducing for the next few weeks.
Thanks much. We appreciate it.
Have a good day.
Drew Lerner, World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, joins us on the Closing Market Report on Wednesday afternoons to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. I'm Todd Gleason. You have a great afternoon.